Calder comes from a long line of sculptors and is really bound into the story of Philadelphia art, but he backed into sculpture in an interesting way, and he's sort of like and unlike his grandfather and his father. All of them, in a way, are very interested in public art, and I think Calder grew into that, coming out of his background as an engineer and a kind of playful sense of art in as part of daily life, so that ultimately his great contribution to American art and to international sculpture is his great public work and the way that humans interact with his work when it's out there in the landscape or swinging overhead as one of his wonderful mobiles. And in a way, that's exactly the same tradition that you see with the great sculptures his grandfather did for City Hall, or the Swan Fountain in Logan Circle that his father did. All of them are great pieces of public sculpture that the people can look at, can learn from, can interact with. And I think Calder carries that tradition through. Sandy Calder carries that tradition through in a very abstract and modern vocabulary.
Did he set out to be different?
I don't think he set out to be an artist to begin with, and so in that respect, he was trying to shrug off his family's legacy. But I think it was in his bones. He just grew up with all of this legacy of sculpture. He couldn't help it. He was making stuff out of everyday objects and scraps and jewelry for his wife and so forth. It's a kind of natural art making that I think really characterizes his outlook.
So he continued as an artist, but because of his choice of materials, and because of his choice of subjects, and because of just the way he expressed himself, he was making his own statement. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, very personal. And I think it comes out of an interest in nature. A lot of his work is based on observation, on landscape, on figures. In that respect, there's a deep, deep connection to his father and grandfather and their figurative sculpture. If you press his work, there are always little narratives of nature, of suns, of mountains, of landscapes, of people. And I think that story is deep in there. But he's interpreted it in a 20th century vocabulary of abstraction, of modernism.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of his work reminded me of kind of Native American work. What would you say his major influences were?
I don't know about his reaction to world art, to, say, African art or Native American art, but certainly that's a theme that runs through early modernism. The artists of the early 20th century were very excited by revitalizing Western art with the abstraction that they saw in world cultures. And I see this in Calder's work. The wonderful collars and pins that have this feeling of the Bronze Age or of African collars or of Native American silver. I'm sure he was looking at that kind of material and intentionally wishing to bring both the spirituality and the abstraction of these other traditions to his work.
When he went to France, he came into contact with avant-garde artists who were experimenting with shape and form.
I think his interaction with artists in France was very important to the development of the mobile. Certainly, he saw in the painting and sculpture in France the surrealist impulse, that is, a sense of kind of interstellar space that you get in the work of Miro, a sense of abstract forms that he might have learned from Mondrian and other artists working in a very abstract style. All of these movements in France, I think, fed his imagination, although his own creation is really very original.
Can you see his influence in people who came after him?
You can walk up the parquet and see the great Marc de Souvarow piece that is across the street from the Calders that are now set up, and understand how the kind of constructivist quality of Calder's work and the use of giant forms and of colored steel has influenced a whole other generation of modern American sculptors.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.